I'm hopeful that people are standing up now and they said enough is enough and they're actually taking to the streets.
U.S. protests extend to many countries around the world. It's Monday, June 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're also on YouTube. Also ahead, coronavirus concerns spike amid protest gatherings, U.S. immigrant communities upset by protests, a religious backlash against Trump, COVID doctors become victims, virtual yoga to relieve stress. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The big story around the world and the United States continues to be protests against police brutality. From the United States to Mexico to Spain, thousands gathered to pay tribute to George Floyd, who died in police custody in the state of Minnesota. His death has sparked protests worldwide and calls for an end to racial violence. We hear more from VOA correspondent Mariamo Diallo.
We want to pause for 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
Civil rights activist the Reverend Al Sharpton asked the crowd at the memorial for George Floyd to imagine how the men must have felt. Video shows Floyd was handcuffed late last month, face down with an officer kneeling on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
As you go through these long 8 minutes, think about what George was going through, laying there for those 8 minutes, begging for his life. Heard someone say, narrating his own death. We can't let this go.
Hundreds more gathered outside the sanctuary at North Central University in Minneapolis, where the service took place. It's the first in a series of memorials set for three cities where Floyd was born, grew up, and died.
But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt.
Elsewhere around the world, more than 1,000 people gathered in Barcelona to show solidarity. People lit candles and held banners.
I'm hopeful that people are standing up now and they said enough is enough and they're actually taking to the streets. I mean, if you go back in history, the people did make change, but they did go to the streets. They did protest. They did take down the people that they put in power. They took them out of power. And we, the people, can take the people that we put in power out of power. We just have to stand up.
In Mexico City, hundreds also paid their respects.
We have to let people know that Black lives do matter.
Organizers read out the names of other Black people who, like George Floyd, died following police incidents as those gathered at the vigil knelt in silence, holding candles. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Japan declines to join United States and others in condemning China for Hong Kong law. Protests support Floyd, Black Lives Matter on three continents. 3-meter great white shark kills surfer in Australia. Vietnam saves animals in 35% of wildlife crimes, according to a report. South Korea blocks Christian activist group from sending Bibles and rice to North Korea. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. As large crowds gather amid protests in the United States, concern is growing that the coronavirus will spread, creating more clusters of infection as states reopen their economies. VOA's Kane Faribault spoke with several medical experts in Illinois, where civil unrest and protests have forced coronavirus testing sites to close in some communities, and that's further hampering efforts to monitor the spread of the virus.
As he watched unrest unfold across the United States, under lockdown from his home office in Chicago, the director of Northwestern University's Institute for Global Health, Dr. Robert Murphy, began to wonder if everyone had suddenly forgotten the country was dealing with a dangerous pandemic.
COVID doesn't care about politics. It just likes to jump from person to person. So you're putting yourself at risk.
It was a message Chicago's mayor, Lori Lightfoot, echoed in her daily address to the public. On the same day, she moved ahead with plans to loosen restrictions in the city, in place since March to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, despite continuing unrest.
That risk is real. It is present, and it will be with us for the foreseeable future. And you need to take the precautions, not only just to protect yourself, but for others in your network, in your home that you care about. Because now you are at heightened risk of COVID-19.
This is just setting us backwards. So instead of being able to control the virus like we had hoped, now it's either going to plateau, maybe go up a little bit, but whatever it is, it's pushing us way down the timeline.
The risk of increasing violence and destruction led the Illinois Department of Public Health to temporarily close community COVID-19 testing facilities, delaying notifications of positive test results and interrupting the medical community's ability to track the virus's spread.
It'll obviously go down because we're not testing as many people. People are afraid to go out. You can't even get anywhere near the downtown. And there's flare-ups all around the city. So, you know, people, they're staying home now more than ever.
When the gatherings subside, Rush University Associate Professor of Medicine and Infectious Disease, Dr. Michael Lynn, says testing will likely return to pre-protest levels, if not increase. But understanding how the recent unrest in the U.S. will impact the spread of the virus won't be immediate.
If there's any spike, it may happen, you know, sometime about a week or 2 weeks after the gatherings. And that's usually about the time it takes for the infection to incubate, manifest symptoms, and become severe enough so that people end up needing hospital care.
But Dr. Lynn offers a glimmer of hope that virus spread might be limited among protesters.
Because we know that a lot of spread tends to happen in indoor areas where there's poor ventilation. In the outdoors, with the air blowing around, there may be less risk of spread. With the sun being out, you know, UV rays can actually also kill the virus. But when it comes to transmission, it's really difficult to predict.
Video of demonstrations show widespread but not universal use of masks that can limit the expulsion of germs in the air.
So it only works if everybody is wearing a mask.
As the number of coronavirus infections in the U.S. nears 2 million, some Americans are weighing health risks while exercising their right to demonstrate. Meanwhile, polling data continue to show clear majorities view curbing COVID-19 as a priority. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
Happening now in Asia, observers say Myanmar has sidelined an international court order to improve conditions for its long-embattled Rohingya minority, despite fears the Southeast Asian government is trying to commit genocide against the group. The UN's International Court of Justice in January ordered Myanmar to take all measures within its power to prevent any acts of genocide. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today. The nationwide demonstrations in the United States protesting the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis have also been accompanied in a number of instances by looting and vandalism. In one immigrant community near Los Angeles, residents are angry and fearful after seeing their livelihoods destroyed in just one night. This latest experience brings back painful memories of the past. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more from Cambodia Town, which is in Long Beach, California.
As the news cameras captured looters from the air, small business owner and genocide survivor Rumpo Chim was on the ground in the middle of it all.
It was very scary. It was just like a movie from a movie script. I mean, they were coming left and right from every direction, and I had to point a gun at him. I had to tell him, I said, you need to leave.
Chim eventually left his restaurant. When he returned, he found his business vandalized, his sister-in-law's jewelry store burned.
We survived the Khmer Rouge and survived coming up here, getting beat up as a young kid growing up here in the United States when we first came here. Damaged all the window. And now this is a flashback. People can say Black Lives Matter, but what about the Asian life and people's life all in general?
Many residents and small business owners in Long Beach escaped the horrors of the Khmer Rouge genocide in Cambodia during the 1970s. Jim says as immigrants, they too faced racism in the U.S. He says these looted buildings are another injustice. As protests over the death of George Floyd continue across the nation, many Cambodian Americans also want to give voice to their experience over the years.
This is not only a fact. The lives are in the African American community, but it affects all of the minority, all their minority. It's just that what happened to us, we didn't report it in most cases.
Charles Song sees history repeating itself. He owned a small business in the 1990s and lived through the violence of the Los Angeles riots.
I remembered my friend and I on the rooftop. I had an AK-47 and he had a shotgun. And the answer was very clearly, those who were able to protect themselves, they still have their store today.
But this time, he fears some businesses may not recover.
What's done is done, but I'm afraid the outcome.
This is very traumatic for me. I have to go back through all the memories I have experienced during the genocide and the level of fear I felt when I was a kid.
Laura Sum lives in Cambodia Town. She works in a trauma healing center, helping genocide survivors find peace from the past. She recognizes the symptoms of trauma here.
I know the looters are hurting. I know my people are hurting. I know African Americans are hurting. And the only way is for us to come together. And I want to make sure that we don't blame the looters as the cause of all this. The system is behind all of this.
For the people who resort to violence for social change, her message is this.
You have to practice nonviolence. You have to speak up in a way that you don't hurt people like my own people.
This is our aftermath.
Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. China is advising its citizens not to visit Australia, citing racial discrimination and violence against Asians in what appears to be Beijing's latest attempt to punish the country for advocating an investigation into the coronavirus pandemic. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, while liberal Christians were outraged by Trump taking a picture with a Bible in front of a church near the White House following his fiery Rose Garden Law and Order speech, many conservative evangelical Christians, who are Trump's core religious constituency, held it as a victory against lawlessness. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara takes a look at whether the president can still depend on their votes in November.
It was only a one-block walk from the White House to St. John's Church that Donald Trump took earlier this week, but images of the American president passing a wall of graffiti to pose for a picture with a Bible are now iconic.
So I went there because somebody suggested it was a good idea, and I thought it was a great idea, and it was a great idea. I didn't know if there were people around there or not.
Trump's visit and the police use of force to clear peaceful demonstrators out of the area was swiftly condemned by Marion Edgar Buddy, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, speaking on NBC.
It was an abuse of the spiritual tools and symbols of our tradition and of our sacred space.
Christian evangelicals, Trump's core religious constituency, defended the president's move.
And I think there was everything right about President Trump standing in front of that church as a sign of solidarity, not just with that congregation, but with houses of worship all across America.
Not all evangelicals support Trump's law and order approach. Televangelist and Trump ally Pat Robertson delivered a rare rebuke, saying the moment calls for compassion, not threats of military force. Trump's favorability among white evangelicals had fallen to 62% at the end of May, compared to nearly 80% in March, according to a poll by the Public Religion Research Institute. But even amid a pandemic and social unrest, Trump's overall approval rating has only slightly dipped. He has a high level of support among Republicans, with the exception of two groups: seniors concerned about the pandemic's impact on their age group, and suburban women.
Particularly the suburban women are likely to be put off by the reaction to some of the social unrest. So those are the groups to keep an eye on. But his core supporters, the people who already strongly support him, evangelical Christians, rural, blue-collar white men, they're not going anywhere.
In 2016, 81% of white evangelicals voted for Trump. Since taking office, Trump has sealed a powerful bond with the group by embracing their political priorities.
Unborn children have never had a stronger defender in the White House.
Trump is likely to count on their support again in the November election.
He's been pro-religious freedom, pro-life, pro-constitutionalist when it comes to court appointments, and pro-Israel. And I think his share of that vote will be even higher than it was in 2016.
Still, with an ongoing pandemic, a lot can happen in 5 months before the election. According to the latest Pew Research, 77% of those who identify with or lean toward the Republican Party say the president is doing an excellent or a good job handling the COVID-19 outbreak, down from 83% in March. Also this week, as protests over the death of a black man pinned down by a white police officer continued, Trump and the First Lady Melania visited the St. John Paul II National Shrine for what the White House called a moment of remembrance, without providing details about who or what was being remembered. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
As we continue with VOA Asia, the United States is slowly reopening, state by state, ending lockdowns imposed to combat the coronavirus. The pandemic has throttled many economic sectors, including the very health industry tasked with saving lives during the crisis. The fallout for healthcare workers and those who rely on them could linger long after the coronavirus is contained. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has the story of one doctor who uprooted himself to work at America's COVID-19 epicenter and who is now unemployed.
Dr. Mike Wilson is home in Texas and back to being a dad of seven kids. It is a far cry from the past month when he served as medical director of this New York City field hospital. He first spoke with VOA when he was midway through working 5 weeks straight.
This is day 22, 14-hour days with no day off yet.
When coronavirus numbers dropped in New York, Dr. Wilson returned home to his Texas hospital group and found himself unemployed.
There's a lack of patients to be seen, so they don't need the staff. So nurses and physicians across the country have been laid off, furloughed.
In April, at the height of the pandemic, America's private healthcare industry laid off 1.4 million workers. Here's how that happened. When the pandemic hit, hospitals canceled lucrative elective surgeries to make room for COVID patients. Smaller hospitals, already struggling financially, were pushed to the brink. Additionally, regular emergency room admissions dropped dramatically as Americans feared entering the hospitals that were handling COVID-19 patients. Dr. Ruchita Gandhi treated a female stroke patient who delayed coming to the emergency room until it was too late.
We could see this clot, and it was massive, and just all of us just felt this terrible sense of, this is one of the cases that we really could have made a huge impact on. This woman had, if she had come within 24 hours, we probably could have pulled that clot.
With patients avoiding the ER and revenue down, hospitals cut staff. Some rural hospitals now operate with just one or two doctors in the emergency room.
That's not enough people.
Dr. K.K. Moody founded MDocs, a group of 23,000 emergency physicians. She says her members run the risk of being fired if they complain their facilities are understaffed.
If there is a multi-car pileup just outside the hospital, we need people there. We don't know when the surge is going to happen. We don't know when the emergencies will happen, so we have to be always ready.
Dr. Moody says America's hospitals have always faced financial storms, but now they are struggling in a hurricane.
This is not just an industry. This has become an industry, and it should not be. It should be about one human taking care of another human.
The $2 trillion coronavirus relief bill passed in March provided $100 billion for hospitals to recoup lost revenue.
Oh, thank you very much.
But that hasn't helped Dr. Wilson, who is polishing his resume. The first time he's done that in years. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
The COVID-19 pandemic has left many people with a feeling of anxiety. And with people spending more time indoors, it has also disrupted some of the exercise routines people use to cope with stress. VOA's Jeff Swikert visits a yoga instructor here in Washington, D.C., who is helping people on both fronts.
I started doing yoga about 25 years ago. What attracted me to yoga was that it incorporated a whole mind-body philosophy. I saw that it was having a positive effect physically and mentally from the very first class that I gave myself. I like people to experience the state of calmness, peacefulness, mental clarity, connecting with their positive energy. When I saw that in Europe, they were starting to shut down essential businesses, I figured it's better to close the studio. We've all been coping individually as our smaller knit families. Mostly we've been staying at home and isolating ourselves, meeting friends online. I didn't want to stop teaching. I didn't want to stop the business. I didn't want to take from the people that look forward to coming to class all the time and enjoy it. So I put it online, continued offering classes every day, especially now that people have a lot of fear. It's a time of need. Now my studio is virtual.
Welcome, everyone.
There's new people doing online classes with me and people that are trying to see for the first time whether it's worth to pay for a class.
Exhale, forward fold, make sure the head drops.
Teaching virtually is different than teaching a live class in front of people.
Slow your mind way down.
I'm engaged, so I'm watching. Even when there's a lot of students, I'm trying to help each individual, even if I have to go all the way up to the computer and see you in a little box. So I still teach the same way. And if I see somebody in one of the little screens backing off, I might encourage them to re-engage.
All the way behind the back leg, Christopher, on the inhale. Yeah.
And I think this technology where you can have a very positive experience without actually having to travel somewhere, it's going to keep going. Even if this passes all the way and I open the studio again, people that aren't here in D.C. can't take my classes. But if I continue to offer classes online, people can still join me from anywhere. I wanted to continue for myself because I like reaching people that want to take classes with me but are physically very far apart.
There is so much happening throughout the world and Asia. The events are fluid. We're staying on top of it for you at VOA Asia, and we invite you to visit all of our different platforms any time of the day or night to keep up to date on all the latest developments. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, as well as Instagram and YouTube. We thank you so much for joining us today, and we thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team. That's Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Pulpyboom. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.